And here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you're out there across America and you listen to our programs and you think that we have a message that is very important and needs to be circulated from sea to shining sea, we hope that many of you will, of course, want to join the Radio Liberty family. And it's as simple as calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and telling the operator there that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, while you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, and of course we encourage you to copy those and get them out and help us to disseminate ideas, truth across America, the truth that you're not getting from Barbara Walters, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw. We have actually supporters, I think, in almost every state in the Union today, Hawaii, Alaska, people who can't even get our programs regularly unless they get them on the Internet or get them on the shortwave. But we really do spread our information from sea to shining sea, and many of our programs are heard the following week in Rochester, New York, on two stations there. And we are indeed fortunate to have an opportunity to reach people all across America. Well, the other thing I wanted to remind all of our listeners is about the Millennium Preparedness Conference that Radio Liberty is sponsoring. It's going to be held at the Embassy Suites Hotel on lovely Monterey Bay. It's right just north of the city of Monterey in Seaside. And we're going to bring in speakers from outside. We're going to talk about the Y2K problem. We're not going to tell you what everybody else is telling you. We're going to tell you the true cause of this, how it is going to be utilized, how bad it's going to be, what you need to do to prepare for it, fiscally, financially, but most of all spiritually. Because if you don't put this into its proper spiritual context, you're not going to understand what's going on. And we fully intend to tell you what the other side is planning. Because there really are people on the other side, those with a different worldview, and we have their publications, we have their charts. We know what they're talking about among themselves, how Y2K is going to be used as an opportunity. An opportunity for what? Well, you'll want to call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we hope that many of you will make reservations right now to be with us on July the 24th at the Embassy Suites Hotel for our Millennium Preparedness Conference, which will be held from 9 o'clock in the morning to 5:30 in the evening, and we're looking forward to seeing you there. Okay, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this evening, Dr. James Herson. We're talking about the Constitution, and we're just beginning to get into the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, which is a restriction not on the states, not on the individual, but on what Congress shall do. So would you pick it up from there, Dr. Herson?
Sure. The first right talks about Congress's restriction. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And this was referred to as the Establishment Clause because, in fact, the English Parliament in the 1600s compelled all persons in England to attend the Church of England. It was the official church. And what the Founding Fathers were concerned about is the idea of establishing an official church, as some of our states did. And as a matter of fact, some states had official churches all the way up until the beginning of the 19th century. And so this was the concern. And this idea that somehow religion should be removed from the public square, I mean, and as you know, we could do a whole show on it, but the idea is so absurd. And looking at original intent, we look at the Founding Fathers and what they said. George Washington wrote a prayer, and he said it was addressed to O most glorious God in Jesus Christ, and it ended this way: let me live according to those holy rules which thou hast this day prescribed in thy holy word. Direct me to the true object, Jesus Christ, the way, the truth, and the life. Bless, O Lord, all the people of this land. And he said, reason and experience forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. John Adams wrote that our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is inadequate to the government of any other. And Madison said, we have staked the whole future of American civilization not on the power of government, but upon the capacity of each and every one of us to govern ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God. John Adams, one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. And we could just go on, but the two founding fathers that are often brought up are Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin as not being true fundamentalist Christian types, although in today's world they would have been considered orthodox. But Benjamin Franklin said, he who shall introduce into public affairs the principles of a primitive Christianity will change the face of the world. And Jefferson said, and Jefferson's the one who is credited for the words wall of separation between church and state. He wrote it in a letter to the members of the Danbury Baptist Church to assure them that we would not establish, the United States would not establish a religion, an official religion. And he said, and I've heard you say this quote, Dr. Stan, can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God? And he said, no power over the freedom of religion is delegated to the United States by the Constitution. And so what we see, and then of course, someone just has to go to Washington and just look around, and they see In God We Trust engraved on the walls of both houses of Congress. We see every session of Congress has always begun with a prayer. It's in the congressional record going all the way back. In the prayer room in the Capitol, there is Washington in prayer surrounded by a quotation of Psalm 16:1, which essentially says, it is God in whom we place our trust. The Ten Commandments are on the wall in the Supreme Court, just over the head of the Chief Justice. And biblical quotations are on the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, the Library of Congress. It's just our Judeo-Christian heritage, the Judeo-Christian paradigm, is everywhere. And so this idea is, plain and simple, is revisionism. It's the same kind of historical revisionism that we've seen in tyrannies and totalitarian governments like the Soviet Union. We've seen it from extremist groups who would try to say that the Holocaust didn't happen. This is the same thing. It's revisionism. It's trying to blot out Judeo-Christian heritage and distort the meaning of the First Amendment to insert words that are not there. So I think this is a very, very crucial thing. And of course, it's a one-way street, because as religious expression is being denied to our children in the public schools, is being denied to all of us in the public square, in the name of multiculturalism, children are being taught Native American prayers, Eastern religion, meditation, various New Age practices, and our tax dollars are going to the United Nations to support a New Age worship center with a resident guru.
And so, of course, it's really the... Everything is anti-Christian. America was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. If you can destroy that foundation, then you destroy the nation. And, you know, I personally believe this is the basis of everything that's going on today. This is an attack on the basis of our freedom. And if you can destroy the Judeo-Christian foundations, then you destroy the nation. And that's exactly what the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union and members of our Supreme Court are intent upon doing.
I like that, renaming that organization that way. And you're absolutely right. It is a spiritual battle. There is no doubt about it. And they hit the soul of our nation. And if we lose that, we literally lose our nation. And then it goes on to say, of course, abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Very fundamental rights, and very different, for example, from UN documents like the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights or the Universal Declaration of Rights, which don't say the UN shall make no law. No, what it says is, we benevolently give you these rights, and by the way, they're subject only to those restrictions as maybe provided by law, so we can take them away, or in the case of the Universal Declaration, these rights can only be exercised in accordance with the purposes, principles, and practices of the United Nations. So there's a catch there, and it's a totally different system.
Let me just make a point, and I'd like your thought on this. There's a lot of talk today about the necessity for an amendment to the Constitution which outlaws flag burning. And, of course, they say, well, people should have the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, and you want to burn a flag, you should have a right to do that. It's guaranteed in the First Amendment. And as I read the First Amendment, it is not guaranteed. You don't have the right to do that by the Bill of Rights, only that the Congress shall not restrict the right of the people as far as their petitioning and assembling and redress of grievances. So the state ought to be able to pass a law that would restrict the flag burning if they wanted to and say, you can't burn the flag, this is a state law. But the federal government has taken that ability away from the states, which traditionally they had.
No, you're right. And I think the idea of amending the Constitution every time we have something that we want to add, it is not, you know, we do it too cavalierly. And in this case, it's grandstanding by politicians who don't have the guts to deal with an illegal war that's fought, illegal, immoral war that violates the Constitution, to deal with technology being delivered to our enemies and hurting our national security. So they stand up and they talk about an amendment which wouldn't be able to be in effect for, you know, years to come. It's really political grandstanding. I guess the only thing you could say is that people, if they want to buy their own flag and burn it in the privacy of their own home, you know, that's fine. But the states should be able to pass laws to that effect. I think they should. Although there's this issue of if we pass an amendment about flag burning, then I think people would just find a new symbol. You know, they'll start burning the Statue of Liberty, and then maybe the an effigy of the unknown soldier, or they'll burn the Constitution, and we're just going to keep trying to regulate that. So I think it's more politics than it is reality, because actually I personally haven't had any problems with anyone burning flags recently. It hasn't been one of those burning issues, no pun intended. But I want to spend a little more time also on the Second Amendment, because that's been a very big issue lately. And it says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And this is another example of people torturing words and desperately trying to come up with a way to say that this amendment does not mean what it plainly says. We have law professors who argue. They say, well, militia really didn't mean militia. It really meant National Guard, or it really meant the state. And even though the Founding Fathers wrote the people, they really meant this for the state. They kind of had a typo. And it's the most absurd thing in the world. Especially when, again, if we look at original intent, the Founding Fathers spoke on this constantly. Thomas Jefferson said, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. Patrick Henry said, the people have a right to keep and bear arms. Samuel Adams said, the Constitution shall never be construed to prevent the people of the United States, who are peaceable citizens, from keeping their own arms. And we went over, Dr. Stan, the Declaration of Independence and the historical background, and no one could ever look at that document and its historical background and look at this Second Amendment and think it meant anything but another check, another balance. One of the complaints in the Declaration was that the British kings had taken away the people's weapons, and the purpose of the right to bear arms is as another check and balance against a tyrannical government. And tyrannies all through history, one of their first acts is always to disarm the people.
Amen.
And so, and incidentally, Dr. Stan, these arguments are so weak that these Second Amendment opponents have made. They came up with a new one recently. some professor came up with a historical breakthrough and that no one had ever discovered before. He discovered that when the amendments were ratified by the states, the Second Amendment was really put in there just to please the Southern states. And, you know, the Southern states were the states that owned slaves. Therefore, the Second Amendment is racist.
Well, you know, this is sophistry. And if anybody who knows the history of sophistry, it was a technique of arguing a false point to the point where it would appear to be logical. And it was practiced in ancient Greece, and it led to the destruction of Greece. In other words, arguing and convincing people the truth is falsehood and falsehood is truth. And sophistry is alive and well in America today and will lead to the same end result here in America unless people begin to think. Someone once said it doesn't matter how ridiculous the thing is. If said often enough, people will believe, and I hope that people do not believe, that the Second Amendment says what it doesn't say.
That's it. I agree with you 100%. And then Third Amendment says no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. And this goes to the intent of the Founding Fathers to respect the privacy of the home and the integrity of private property, because the British had forced people in the 13 colonies to house British soldiers in their homes, and this was to prevent that in the United States. And the Fourth Amendment talks about the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, and that this shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause. Probable cause means a valid reason for presuming someone's guilty of a crime. And this probable cause has to be supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. And this, again, protecting private property. And private property rights are inextricably bound up in freedom and in privacy. And in order for the government to search a person or a person's property, there must have probable cause, unlike where Great Britain and in the 13 colonies, the government would just come along and search any person, any place it wanted to search. And, of course, that's the way it has been in tyrannies and totalitarian governments all through history. And no person in the Fifth Amendment shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. And a presentment's a report made by a grand jury of an offense based on the grand jury's old knowledge and observations without an indictment. An indictment's a formal written charge against one or more people presented to a court. And this is very important because here in our country, it's based on a system that if you're going to be accused of a crime, you're going to know exactly what you're accused of and be able to mount a defense, unlike other countries and unlike the international courts and international tribunals, which indict in secret. And people are kidnapped and all of a sudden whisked off to a court, which is very much like the International Criminal Tribunal, the former Yugoslavia, which indicts in secret. And then there's our exceptions in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia or when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Now that, of course, is because of the military rules. And nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, the rule of double jeopardy. You can't be tried for the same crime twice.
But they get around that now by first of all, going after you in the state court and then the federal court, or in the criminal court and then the civil court. So they're always looking for a means of getting around these concepts of the Constitution.
That's why it's so important to have an informed citizenry, just like Radio Liberty provides that service. And nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. This is when people plead the Fifth, and it's so that testimony in our system is voluntary, that we can never have a situation where there's an incentive for the government to beat testimony out of a witness. It has to be voluntary, and nor be deprived of life, liberty or property without due process of law. This is a very important phrase. That means that people are never going to be deprived of their lives, of their freedom, or anything they own without a notice and an opportunity for a fair and impartial hearing. And unlike the situation, for example, the Japanese internment, where people were literally deprived of their liberty and their property without any due process, without any legislation through an executive order.
Oh, of course, what about forfeiture that they're using now, charging you you may be involved in drugs, so we're going to take your property?
Exactly. That is totally unconstitutional, and the Supreme Court has absolutely lied down on the job and not held properly in that area. But fortunately, we do have some legislation now reforming it, as I mentioned.
Right.
And nor shall private property, and here's our private property rights, ever be taken for public use without just compensation. So the Fifth Amendment's a very big amendment, and this, of course, is being violated by these environmental overregulations based on pseudoscience and based on New Age philosophy that are coming along and depriving people of their livelihoods and of their life savings based on things like calling a bug an endangered species or a rat, or utilizing overregulation, wetlands regulations, and other ways of depriving people of private property without just compensation. So this is a very, very important amendment. And the Sixth Amendment is the idea of, in a criminal prosecution, that anyone that's accused gets the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed, again, of the nature and cause of the accusation, and to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process of obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for defense. So we have a speedy and public trial, we have a right to counsel, we have a right to confront witnesses. These are very, very important and unique rights that we have in the United States of America that are not shared by many other countries in the world, and that's why this International Criminal Court is a very, very dangerous concept, because we're going to be tried by judges that don't necessarily subscribe to these kinds of rights. And the Seventh Amendment talks about suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. And this idea is that we have, even in a civil suit, when you're sued, we have a right to a jury trial, and that right is there. In cases of common law, which means the civil law, dealing with private matters when people are sued in torts or contract or other things. And the Eighth Amendment talks about excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Because in Great Britain, prior to the Constitution, high treason could be punished by hanging a person, cutting him down, disemboweling him while he was still living, and cutting off his head. So this was quite on the minds of the Founding Fathers to not have excessive bail or unusual punishments. And this provision has been used recently to strike down, believe it or not, punitive damages, saying that punitive damages that are excessive are punishments. And so the Supreme Court is now asserting a control over some of these really outrageous punitive damages awards. The Ninth Amendment, a very ignored amendment, preserves the sovereignty of all of us. Because what it says is the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So it's saying that, again, enumerated powers, just because there are certain rights in the Constitution, the ones that have already been implanted in the people by God are still there. They're not denied. They just wanted to make sure. And the 10th Amendment adds some more punctuation to that and says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And that's the amendment that Bill Clinton tried to erase over a little over a year ago with Executive Order 13083 on federalism, where he had 9 criteria that you could drive a truck through and basically eliminate the remnant of state sovereignty that's left after judicial activism. And fortunately, thanks to the alternative media, thanks to shows like Radio Liberty and citizen activism, he suspended that executive order in about 60 days.
And basically what we're saying is there are powers that are delegated to the United States government by the Constitution, but the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states. In other words, certain things the states cannot do, but all other powers are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, because those are our God-given rights, or the state's rights, as you say.
That's right. This is one of the fundamental pillars of the American system. And the other one is, of course, the inalienable rights. But the fact that we have these rights and powers that are implanted in us by our divine creator, and that we benevolently grant not all of them, but some of them, limited rights to the federal government so that they can perform certain enumerated functions, means that we have reserved those rights to the states and respectively to the people, and that government cannot interfere because they're reserved. That's that idea of limited government. And so, it's one of the fundamental issues. And those 10 amendments are what we call the Bill of Rights.
And, of course, I think the important thing is for people to understand that liberty and limited government, a limited federal government, are synonymous, and tyranny and total federal government are synonymous, and the fear is we're moving towards total government.
If you draw the trend line, there's no question that if we as citizens sit on our hands and just allow this trend to continue, we will eventually lose our liberty, but we don't have to, because if we inform ourselves and inform our fellow citizens, and we fully engage and we hold our politicians, make them go back to a strict construction of these wonderful documents the Founding Fathers gave us, we can restore this nation again.
Amen to that. And, of course, what we need is for an educated populace, and then, of course, to bring pressure on our elected representatives to rein in judicial activism and restore our God-given Constitution. Dr. Hirson, it's been a fascinating 4 series, and we really appreciate you taking the time to share your wisdom with us.
It's my great pleasure, and God bless you for your service and for helping inform the people, and I appreciate being with you.
Good night, and God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is Dr. Stan here, and I hope you've enjoyed this 4-tape series as much as we've enjoyed putting it together. It's going to be available very, very soon. And remember that liberty and limited government are synonymous. Tyranny and total government are synonymous.